Now, we have talked on the air before about the lessons that we can learn by paying attention to the ongoing battle between professional sports and the coronavirus. Well, the New England Patriots, who were supposed to play today after rescheduling from Sunday, have had to postpone their game again due to new infections. So let's check the score between the virus and Boston's pro sports teams with Radio Boston's Chris Sidorick. Hey there, Chris.
Hey, Tiziana.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Call in to Chris and me. What do you make of the current mess that the NFL is in, that the Patriots are in right now? How do you think we've handled bringing back sports overall? Any winners? Any great lessons? Any cautionary lessons from how we're seeing professional sports do this? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Chris, okay, I think the thing to do here is to have you just start by walking us through what's happened with the Pats and the coronavirus over the last 10 days, because it has been kind of crazy.
Yeah, there's been more plot twists than the first three seasons of Game of Thrones, I think. So this is the second outbreak that the league is dealing with. The Tennessee Titans had their outbreak start on September 24th, and that's basically still ongoing. So it gives you an idea of how this thing can go if it's not handled well. So if we go back to a week ago Saturday, we got the news Saturday morning that Cam Newton, Patriots quarterback, had tested positive on Friday. Now, the Pats had a game scheduled for the following day, Sunday, against the Chiefs. It's worth noting that's a huge game for the NFL. Two marquee franchises, brings a big audience. So there's a lot of money on the line there. The league really wants that game to happen. So that game gets moved from Sunday to Monday, contingent, obviously, on no new test results. The Patriots are taking a few extra precautions. They actually took two planes to that game, you might remember, about 20 players and staff that had close contact with Newton on one plane, and then a plane of those who had not had close contact with him. But those guys are all in the same locker room together, on the sidelines together, on the field together, so there's obviously some crossover there. So then on Tuesday last week, Patriots cornerback Stephon Gilmore tests positive. We get that news on Wednesday. The Patriots close down their facility. On Thursday, they have no new positives, so the NFL says the game can still go on. They move the game against the Broncos from Sunday to Monday today. The Patriots decide to keep their facilities closed until Saturday, and I want to point out that that's a Bill Belichick decision, so put a pin in that. We'll come back to that. Yesterday morning, wake up, there's another positive test. That brings the team's total to four, and the NFL decides to move that game. The team will be closed down until Wednesday when they can begin practicing for next Sunday.
Well, I just feel like, Chris, this is a really good moment to note, and we've heard this on the Dr. Colin segments on Radio Boston so often. There's a difference between the test turnaround time of 24 hours and how long somebody can be symptomatic and infectious, right? Can spread the coronavirus. So the compressed time frame of the last 10 days that you told us, there were like three different games that should have been played during that time, which is just kind of mind-boggling. Now, when the season started, you and I talked about the fact that NFL has had more time than any other of the major pro sports teams to get ready for this, but it doesn't seem like they've played it out well. And are they able to adjust now that we're starting to see these rates spread?
I mean, there's a lot there to unpack. So I want to first comment, you're absolutely right about the time of transmission. The CDC says it can take up to 14 days for the virus to show up, and that you can still be contagious for 72 hours without showing any symptoms, or you may never show symptoms at all. So as you mentioned, the slow test results, having a game a couple of days after you know that the virus is on your team is questionable at best, I'd say. And the lack of planning you're talking about is hugely frustrating. The NFL had 5 months to figure out something. And they basically decided we're going to go ahead with the same number of games, the same schedule, the same bye weeks as we would in a normal year. For an example of how complicated this could get moving forward, I want to read you something here, Tiziana. Buckle up, because these are all the games that had to move just to accommodate the Broncos-Patriots game moving from today until next Sunday. So you also had the Chiefs-Bills game from Thursday move to next Monday. You've got Jets-Dolphins from week 10 goes to week 6. Jets-Chargers goes from week 6 to week 11. Jaguars-Chargers goes from week 8 to week 7. Chargers-Broncos from week 11 to week 8. Chargers-Dolphins from week 7 to week 10. Dolphins-Broncos from week 6 to week 11. And I'm just weak, because that is a lot to handle. And it just shows you how many moving pieces there are.
Well, and it also seems untenable. Chris, let me just put the number out. Are you as overwhelmed as I am, listeners, by hearing that list? I mean, I don't even know how you shift that many games around. You think about the logistics of it, and I'm sure Chris will bring us back to the money of it as well. How are you responding to the NFL and the moment it finds itself in, and the moment the Patriots find themselves in this pandemic? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So, I mean, that's nuts, Chris. What are the players saying?
Yeah, it is nuts, and it shows you they don't have the flexibility that, say, baseball did, and they obviously are not doing the bubble that hockey or basketball did. So the players are having mixed reactions. You know, some have expressed concerns about not being able to have their same routines. Football is really built on Wednesdays we practice X, Thursdays we practice Y, and kind of staying with that routine throughout the year. So that's gone pretty much. Bye weeks are a huge deal for football. Having a week off to get some guys back from injury, to rest, to maybe change some of your strategies, formations, things like that. I actually think, and actually that's, you're hearing the Broncos complain about that because they practiced all week last week getting ready for the Patriots game. And now they're told, oh, surprise, that was your week off. Hope you enjoyed all those practices you wouldn't have had otherwise.
Without the rest, right.
Yeah, exactly. They're really upset about that. And I think rightfully so. You mentioned player reaction here. The Patriots have had, I think, some interesting voices step forward. Jason McCourty, the cornerback for the Pats, was on phone calls with the league and the player association this week. And I want to play a little bit of what he said about that experience this Saturday.
So for them, it's not about what's in our best interest or our health and safety. It's about, you know, what can we make protocol-wise that sounds good, looks good, and how can we go out there and play games? So I think what I kind of learned personally throughout this situation is going to be up to us as the individuals in this building to just really take care of one another.
So, you know, on the one hand, that's great. The team's looking out for each other and individual accountability and all that. But that's a lot to put on a team and the players. And also that idea that your own players association doesn't care about you. He said at one point during that commentary, they don't care. And so you started hearing these rumblings over the weekend that the Patriots, even if the league was saying the game was still on, they were thinking about what it would mean if they decided not to play. And that obviously would have huge ramifications for the NFL.
So I'm cueing in on that being one of the McCourty brothers who have so often provided leadership, you know, on the Patriots. You're talking about the fact that the league is leaving it up to the teams. Let's size up the teams. Let's size up the Pats and other teams. You know, if they're leaving it up to the teams and we're seeing spread like this, it sounds like that is not working.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the league is in real trouble here. If they don't find a way to become more flexible and figure out a workable solution, because crossing your fingers and hoping that the virus is not going to continue to spread around the league, I think is being pretty naive. You look at the Tennessee Titans, in the middle of their outbreak, they're now being investigated for players holding workouts that were not authorized by the league, that they were supposed to be shut down. And there they are out on the field working out together. So clearly not doing what they should to slow the outbreak. I want to go back to the Bill Belichick decision not to hold practice at the end of last week, because Jason McCourty hit on that on Saturday as well and basically said something I think is pretty relatable, that Coach Belichick and the rest of the team really are just trying to figure this thing out just like the rest of us.
The coronavirus has stopped us all, and we've all had to figure it out. And that's what we're doing here. No different than my kids figuring out how they're going to go to school this year or anybody else throughout our country. And I think he felt like just from different doctors and medical experts who have been studying and getting to know this virus, that it was in our best interest not to be around each other because there was still a lot of uncertainty and a lot of unknowns.
I don't know about you, Tiziana, but that idea of uncertainty and unknowns feels pretty relevant in our lives right now. And I think it leaves so much up to the organization. And it's important to remember, you're not just talking about the players. You're talking about their families and friends, folks that they might potentially bring the virus to outside of that. And I want to go back to Bill Belichick's approach, because listen to how he described the way he's thinking about this on Saturday.
Literally taking this I wouldn't even say day by day. It's more hour by hour. So we'll continue to move forward, but at the same time, know that we have to be ready to change, adjust, and adapt as the situation calls for.
Okay, so Chris, I'm going to let my emotions out here a little bit because I hear this day by day, hour by hour, and I go back to the fact that you said just a couple of minutes ago the NFL had 5 months to prepare for and plan for running a season during a pandemic. And even more so, they had an example in the NBA of a successful way to do that. So let's do a little compare and contrast here. Talk about the outcomes that didn't happen in the NBA, the choices that they made, because this is our moment where we are learning from the experience of pro sports in the coronavirus era.
Yeah, I think it's a great comparison because basically everything the NFL is doing wrong, the NBA did right, and they came before them. So how have they not taken that lesson and run with it? There were things the NFL could have done. They could have added extra bye weeks. They could have shortened the season to make room for that. They could add a week to the end of the year. There are lots of ways to give themselves more flexibility, but they really just kind of charged ahead business as usual. And I think, unfortunately, that's kind of indicative of this league. The NFL, you know, likes to talk about the shield, you know, the NFL logo in the shape of a shield. When they discipline players, they do it because they're protecting the shield. It's almost like they thought this shield was a real shield that was going to protect them from a virus that's running rampant. You look at the NBA, they just finished 172 games over 3 months, 0 positive tests. That is staggering, I think, both in terms of a sports accomplishment, but also in terms of a public health accomplishment. They had the bubble. We've talked about that in the past, but it's not an airtight bubble. There were, you know,
well, and remind of hotel Chris, staff take a second things. Here. Yeah. Yeah, remind people what the bubble means. Remember, you know, not a lot of our listeners may know the details of how the bubble worked in the NBA. Just briefly, when we say bubble, what do we mean?
Yeah, so basically players and coaches and certain media members basically went to this hotel complex at part of Disney World in Florida, and they were forced to quarantine before they got there. Then they get there, they take a test, and they weren't really allowed to move around the area until they show that their test results are negative. And then they basically had free reign of certain parts of the hotel resort, but they couldn't leave. That was kind of the deal. You're here for the 3 month run, and everybody can be a little looser in terms of restrictions because they're in the bubble. They're not leaving. They're not being exposed to anyone else who might be carrying the virus. There were also folks who came into that bubble. Like I said, hotel staff, folks like that, that would have to follow very strict protocol, testing, quarantining, distancing, masks. And I think that is really one of the biggest lessons out of this is that stuff works, that really if you follow the recommendations and you take those steps to protect the situation, that you really can slow the spread. 0 cases over 3 months. It's crazy.
Yeah, so here's the other lesson I find myself thinking that we're taking out of this, and this feels important because as we know, in this moment, we are also experiencing a national reckoning on race, a massive national reckoning on race and on a history of systemic racism and anti-blackness in America. And here we have a league, the NBA, with players who are speaking out, feeling empowered, talking about Black Lives Matter, putting messages on their jerseys, really empowered as players to call the shots. And then you have the NFL with its history of suppressing messaging on race, on Black Lives Matter, on the history of systemic racism, and a relationship where it sounds like the players feel the owners are being very cavalier with their lives and health. And I think one can't help but compare and contrast those two things, Chris.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Tiziana. And think back, remember, the Milwaukee Bucks, basically, whether you want to call it a strike or a boycott, they declined to participate in a playoff game because they were trying to send a message about the exact issues you're talking about there. And the league reached out to the players, talked it over with them, figured out ways that they could kind of bring everybody to the table. Compare that to the NFL, who basically ran Colin Kaepernick out of the league for years for kneeling quietly during the national anthem. You're talking about two very different approaches. And I think that ownership dynamic is really important. The NBA is kind of long been considered the league where player empowerment is at its greatest. And there's even been some debate in recent years about whether or not there's too much player empowerment in terms of determining where they want to play and who they want to play with. I think you really saw the strengths of allowing the players to have that kind of sway. Compare that to the NFL, where there are no guaranteed contracts. Players are basically at-will employees and those deals can be ripped up as soon as they go down and suffer a career-ending injury. So you're talking about the most dangerous sport does the least to protect its players. And that's been a theme that's long been the case with the NFL. And I think you're really seeing that being driven home in the pandemic.
So, okay, we have had 6 months now to watch baseball, basketball, hockey, and football. And I do want to acknowledge for our listeners, the world is full of many more sports and women playing them as well as men. But right now we're focusing on the lessons of these big American professional sports, trying to navigate the pandemic era. What are the lessons that are emerging here, Chris?
I mean, I think the biggest one is being smart works, right? Sitting down and thinking about things and planning it out. It's what both the NHL and the NBA did when they came up with their plans, and it worked. You saw them complete their seasons. And I think they were faced with a much more challenging task than the NFL was. The NFL had kind of the perfect calendar setup to basically put something into place to deal with this. They had just finished the Super Bowl about a month before this pandemic really caught on here, and they could have taken that time to sit down and thoughtfully come up with a plan. They didn't. They just kind of charged ahead and hoped that things would be okay without any sort of big picture vision. And I think that's what's most frustrating coming out of this situation. We'll see if they can adapt and make it through. They're going to have to be more flexible than they've been up to this point. And there's going to be a point where the calendar is not going to cooperate with them. So I think that's on the logistical side. The takeaway for me, to be honest, I think sports are good for the soul. And I think having them back has been just an absolute thrill. Being able to it's a communal experience. You can watch and enjoy with each other, even if we're together alone or however you want to put it. Sports bring us together. The stories bring us together. And I think it's been a beautiful thing.
Well, I love loving sports with you. That's Radio Boston's Chris Sitterick. Chris, thanks for being on today.
Thanks for having me.